This meeting is now being recorded.
This is Adrian's mic. Clearly been hacked. What standards are there that registries and registrars have for EPP, zone file information? I know we can go to the EPRFC standards and all that, but what organization can one look at, or what can we do as a group to have all of our standards in one place?
Good question. We'll take that one. It's Adrian's rules. Go on, George. Yeah, I know where you're going. Brent, I'll get you next, mate, and I'll come over to Sherry.
And there was another one over the back. So the Domain Name Association has a technical group whose focus is on just these types of issues of better aligning registry and registrar technical practices. Certainly, those sorts of conversations we view as being valuable.
Hey.
Within the DNA is the right forum to have those conversations, we think.
Good answer. You just bought yourself a drink. So, there is a repository within the DNA that does that. So we've answered. We can tick that one straight off. Paul, there's one answered. Brett, and then Jerry.
I think abuse mitigation is a topic for discussion. I think it's in all of our best interests to prevent the phishing and malware and spam coming out of our domain names. Our experience has been that different registrars have different responsiveness when it comes to that. And so I think it's something that we can collectively work on together.
So is the question, how can registrars respond better to abuse?
Yeah, I think so. My perception, and obviously the registrars are on the front line here. They have the customer contact. They see where the credit card is. They know sort of who the customer is. As the registry, I don't necessarily know that. My perception is that a very small number of registered name holders are registering a very large number of domain names. And and the registrar knows that this customer has 1,000 names in its account. 100 have already been used for spam. Well, I bet I know what's going to happen to the next 900. So, are you only reacting to the 100 where you have reported spam, or are you actually being proactive and saying, I see what's coming. I've looked in your portfolio now, and I know what's happening here. And trying to be sort of holistic in dealing with a bad customer. I think that would help a lot of the abuse that we're seeing.
Just hold five, guys. Are you responding to that?
Sort of.
Just hold it for 2 seconds, just because I promised Sherry the microphone.
Either way. But so Sherry Falco, ICM. I guess one thing that I would find interesting, and it's not so relevant to RTLDs anymore because we're in our last sunrise, but the whole TMCH notice and claims, it seemed to be a very challenging implementation for registrars to pick up, and many registrars opted not to do TMCH sunrises. And the claims piece for premium names and variable price names seems to be something that always takes a long time to kind of run through, and it's an experience that's really a problem from a customer perspective, right? They want to buy a name, and then if you have these special processes, it takes 30, 60 days, they have to wait. So I don't know if that's something that generally people are feeling a pain around and we want to discuss, but something like that would be interesting.
We'll add it to the list. Thank you very much. Quick response there, boys, and then we'll come back to our list and try to prioritize.
Sure. Hey, so I'm Graham from Two Cows. Responding to Brett's comment briefly, one of the things that some of the larger registrars are working on, and we talked a bit about in Buenos Aires in the registrar session, is that and I'm not going to call it best practices, and it's certainly not a code of conduct, but we're looking at harmonizing, or starting by collecting and then looking at ways to harmonize, standardize, and then share the practices that some of the larger registrars are doing around, malware, phishing, and all sorts of bad stuff. So if that is a topic you're interested in and you're a registrar in the room, come find me, and I can get you in touch with the person that's working on that, and we can get more information in there. And hopefully come up with a shareable document that helps people who have issues, who are our customers or outside the space, come to us, find the information they need to submit problems to us, and have a clear and transparent understanding of how that complaint will be responded to.
Can you do me a favor and get that? Can you post or email Jennifer and Paul and get that topic spread out to the both lists?
Sure.
Because it sounds like one that you've got some information that guys could come to you about. Yeah?
Sort of. We're still collecting at this point, so we're still talking with registrars
right.
and figuring out what they're doing and if you want on board.
Oh, I meant to raise that you're doing that and people could then
sure.
email you to get that information.
Cool.
To give you that information is what I meant. Sorry. Thanks. Volker.
Yes, also in response to Brett, in some cases, as a reseller registrar, we don't have that information who has registered those domain names. That's not information that the reseller has. We have a reseller that has maybe 100,000 domain names, and if of those 100 are rotten because they were registered by a certain domain, illicit element in the registrant pool, then yes, we don't know which ones they are if they use different data sets for their registrations. The reseller might know, so we pass this information on and allow him to react, but we do not have that information and to know which other domain names by that registrant exist. That is one point, and the other point is that we also would like the registries to be more consistent in how they report abuse to us. Some registries say, we've received an abuse report, now we have server locked the domain name, please tell your customer. That's all we get. In other cases we get, we've received an abuse report, please do something, but nothing else, no information about the abuse report. Doesn't help us much. Or we receive a very detailed information which helps us to investigate on our own. So amongst the registry also best practices would be helpful of how to communicate abuse that you receive to us so we can act and we have the sufficient information available to us that we can take action and investigate on our own.
You want to respond? And just before you do, ICANN will go to any length to listen to this conversation. When we're talking about takeaways, I think that's exactly the kind of thing that we could productively do is figure out what is a standard form abuse report that would provide the helpful information back to the registrar. I would love to figure out a way to do that.
It's a great takeaway here, boys. Well done. Jordan, again.
So there's this process that ICANN has initiated that delightful Yasmin O'Mare is chairing, where ICANN has asked us, ICANN initially went off on their own, and then subsequently we talked them back into like working with them in order to work out what they call a security framework for dealing with abuse. And in my opinion, the discussion we are having right now ought to be, that's exactly what that security framework ought to look like. How do registries and registrars work together in order to address identified security issues? I think there's a meeting about that tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., where is it, Yasmin? In a secret place, but Yasmin can tell you. And I would certainly encourage us to have that conversation, move it into that forum, because I think that's the right place. I want that to be the security framework we come up with, as opposed to some bizarre set of rules that ICANN is going to come up with, which is how do registries and registrars work together to address issues that we identify.
Thanks, mate. Good. Jeff, I did promise Daniel I forgot him, mate. So do you want to jump up, mate? Sorry, Jeff.
So on the abuse subject, we're the largest TLD, and I think that we get hit with the largest amount of abuse because of the price point that we're at. So we had to develop our own system, and we have over 60 feeds that we feed data into in real time. And there's been some registrars that have been great and some that haven't, and pursuant to our policies, if we find a serial abusive registrant, we have enough data to know what other domains they have, and we will proactively suspend them from our zone if they're distributing malware and doing phishing and provide them and the registrar an opportunity to clear that. But these are some of the things that we've had to do. Maybe everybody doesn't have the engineering resources to develop something like that, but I put some top people to figure that out and pay for all of these feeds to get all this real-time data in so that we can kind of act accordingly. And for that reason, you won't see us on top phishing reports and malware reports, because if somebody registers a domain and uses it for phishing or malware, we know the MX records they use for spam, we know the A records they use, whether they're shared or not, that there's some variance there. We know the name servers they use, and we're able to detect that and actually stop the abuse before it happens, or in some cases, immediately once we're notified that it happens, because the security industry is very good at sharing that data in providing resources on, you know, there's toolbar data that you know when there's malware, or, you know, there's tons of information out there, so.
Yeah. So, Jordan, does that sound like that sort of positive initiative could be dovetailed into the group that you were just talking about? Oh, yeah, Yasmin's there now. It was merely just that there seems to be a registry provider here that's going above and beyond to tackle this issue. Maybe that sort of positive feedback and what they did could be utilized within this group and disseminated throughout all the other registries?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of registries that have been doing that, registrars. So I think it's good to collect information from everyone. I just want to take that example and just bring it up a level.
Sure.
Which really is that the macro question is, how do we create enough trust within our industry to make sure that we stay away from the defensive position we're always in, which is basically being attacked at every, whether it's ICANN meetings or everywhere else. We're always on the defensive. What are we going to do as a group to regulate ourselves to make sure we, in essence, weed out the bad actors rather than having to be on the defense all the time? And phishing, farming, malware, that's just one example that, you know, registries and registrars have been dealing with for, you know, probably since 2006 is when a lot of them developed programs. But really, it's all about creating trust. This industry, or I say the community, the ICANN community, they don't trust us as a group. We're always seen as the bad actors. How do we get ourselves out of playing defense and more playing offense to actually engage in the self-regulation that was always meant?
And unfortunately, it's got a real answer, and that real answer is I call bullshit. Bad actors' money is just as good as a good actor, right? So the bad actors pay money, and they're going to buy domain names and buy a lot of them, so I'm still going to want them. Mate, I've been in the industry for 15 years. Everybody hides and tries to do little spiels like you just do. It's bullshit rhetoric. I don't want it to be, and I'm saying you.
No.
But that thing has been said forever. Oh, we need to mobilize. But then as soon as the bad actor comes in wanting to spend $5 on a domain name, we sell it. That's what we do.
Look, there's a lot, again. You've just actually, on your own, created a definition of bad actor in your mind, which may not be the same definition.
Is yours Nicolas Cage?
Which you have to be careful about when you say in public, because that kind of statement is what leads us to get no trust in this industry.
Yep.
Right? I think many of the new entrants are much more responsible than that, if we can agree what a bad actor is. If we don't regulate ourselves, then we can expect a dozen more years of the GAC and everybody else regulating us.
I agree. And I think when we hear more about this Healthy Domains initiative from the DNA, the donuts are driving, I think that, you know, this is a perfect place for that. Did I see Mason here? Mason, can you give us a quick Yaz, do you mind?
Yes.
2 seconds on the Healthy Domains initiative, because I think it's right down the center of the fairway for where Jeff was going.
I'm a new speaker. Does it count?
Sure.
Okay,
yes,
sure.
You get two drinks.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at this point. So the Healthy Domains Initiative is something that Donuts dreamed up for, 4 or 5 months ago, and then we've since put under the umbrella of the DNA. But the main idea behind it is not only to create a healthy domain ecosystem for registrars and registries and all our customers, but also to demonstrate self-regulation in a way that disinvites additional intrusion by ICANN or the GAC or anybody else into our business model.
Law enforcement.
Right. So we've had one inaugural meeting of a couple of key players that are driving the initiative. It's now starting to grow, and it's something you'll be hearing more about. But there's definitely a move afoot to do exactly what we're talking about here.
Yep. Thanks, mate. So I guess it's to watch this space. Is that what we're saying? And when there'll be a call for people to participate at some point when it reaches.
Correct.
All right. Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Yasmin. Jeez.
So just to add to the that Spec 11 framework working group, the GAC and law enforcement, members of the GAC and law enforcement, primarily from the Public Safety Working Group, are involved in that effort. So it's really what I would like is for the registries and the registrars to be aligned and, I guess, contribute to this effort with a united voice. So we are meeting at 8 o'clock tomorrow. Please, registrars, do attend. We had the last call, and the GAC want to take it in a direction that we just don't want. They want this to be an effort that creates binding obligations on the registry operators, and to some extent, I don't know, possibly the registrars regarding how to respond to these security threats. So please join us tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Registrars, I really want you guys to be on board with the approach that we have. Your chair for the working group is Theo, so please channel any feedback and requirements through to him. Thanks.
Thanks, Jazz. Good promo. Rubens.
Just a comment on when the community see us as bad actors. Not all of the community see us as bad actors. Other parts of the community see us as gatekeepers of the Internet because we operate in the global governance structure. So they say, oh, these are the guys that I will use to enforce policies or to enforce ideas to prevent bad things from happening on the Internet. Because there is no such thing on hosting providers and other stuff. So we need to push back on that idea that we control the Internet and we can respond to every threat that is out there on the Internet.
Thanks, buddy. That's my phone. And it's off. Good stuff. Okay, so we've done, we had a little chat around how registries and registrars work around the adjustment of pricing. We've just gone and talked about abuse a little bit. Any other topics? Real quick, cool. We've got one. Fantastic.
Alex, Hui Global. I'd be interested to hear from registrars on their approaches and thoughts on IDNs in general, their experiences onboarding, their marketing efforts, their pain points, and similarly from other fellow registries in terms of how they've been progressing with onboarding with registrars in promoting their IDNs. I know that it's not just foreign registries such as ours that have IDNs. There are North American and European-based registries that also have IDNs and Australia and that are also out there trying to promote IDNs. And I think by and large, pretty much every registrar that I talk to and work with has already integrated IDNs as a subset or a devoted tab on their websites, and basically it all just kind of gets lumped in there as IDNs. And I don't think that's the best way to approach it. I think there's better ways to promote them and to actually extract that value of those IDNs for their customers. But then I think the onus is on the registries to help the registrars to understand what each individual IDN is and what the potential value could be for their customers.
Great. I think that I'd say be interested in that, but I'm only one hand here. Let's put that on the list. One thing I did want to remind you all of is it's good to hear from the big registrars and the big registries. I love it when someone like George Menardos puts up his hand, a single registry operator. We'd love to see that from the registrar side as well. So to hear the voices of the smaller registrars, don't get drowned out by the bigger guys in the room. And you, I know that you're not always aligned. Sorry, Tom? No. And Jeff, I guess. Oh, jeez. He said it. Yeah, that's all right. He said you were awesome. All righty, so let's quickly review. Paul, can you help me out here, mate? Review the topics, and then we'll do a quick show of hands as to which one we want to do next. Okay? Not seeing any more topics want to be discussed. We got that, sorry? Half an hour to go. All right, stay with us, folks. Okay, so the future model of registrar, where's that going? Do we, dare I say, do we still need registrars as separate contracted parties going forward? That was me trying to paraphrase Mike Pelage. Is Mike still here? Damn it. Okay, good. ICANN budget and justification of fees. So maybe let's do a show of hands. There's only going to be about five topics here.
So let's get a show of hands. The first one for the future of the registrar model. Show of hands who wants to discuss that. Mike Pallage is out of the room. Good. All right, the ICANN budget and the justification of fees. No one wants to discuss. You got to at least put your hand up. Jim, you brought it up. All right, that's one. Okay. This is going to be a quick session. Pain points we've sort of been on already with respect to the adjustment of pricing, consistency of pricing and things. Was there any other pain points? Do we want to go back to pain points for a little bit between registries and registrars? Has anyone got any... Volker, is this a vote for yes? Or a vote that you've got something to say? It's used for Wyoming.
Maybe just one more pain point would be handling of contracts and contact details of registrars. Registries should really use a centralized system like EROS to manage the contacts of the registrars so that a registrar that has updates to that contact doesn't have to contact individually each registry and maybe re-sign the agreements, but rather update them to a central resource provided by ICANN like EROS.
So let me make sure I understand that. So you're saying registrars from time to time will change their contacts, and you think the registries should keep a central database of registrars such that when you do change your contact, I've got it wrong?
Slightly. I mean, when you have a contract with a registry and you move, for example, your office, then you have to update that data with the registry. At this time, with the even in the old registry world, it was a very complex process of having to inform, re-sign agreements, having to inform all the registries, sign documents, certificates, fill out forms with all the new information, contact people, everything, and do that for every registry with their own forms. Having a centralized method of updating all the registries of changes in the contact information of a registrar or authorized personnel in the registrar would be very helpful for registrars as not to have to inform 1,000 registries with documents and triplicate forms with 10 pages or more. It's impossible.
Yeah, I got some concerns with that, but I'll listen to the floor. Robbie, I'll get you next.
I think that's a really interesting idea. I think ICANN has proven through EROS that they are totally incapable of doing that themselves. We should have an industry group like DNA do that instead. Yay, yeah. No, so I think if there was interest from registries and registrars, like I think that's the exact sort of thing that we could do as an industry as opposed to relying on something like EROS or ICANN to do.
Yes, I do, and I definitely, again, this is, I'll go back to my other comment about not wanting to have ICANN in the middle of our business model and having them be the one that, be the one using their system to update about changes. But the other piece, just to sort of to give you an idea of another reason this concerns me, is the radar system, right? It's a system registrars use. It has contact information. It's supposed to be used for the TAC, the transfer emergency, but also you're supposed to be able to put in your IP addresses that are whitelisted for when you do transfers to be able to do lookups. This way you don't get speed bumped or blocked based upon that. I have had to email registrars constantly saying, hey, please unblock us, and, because of this, you guys are blocking us because we have transfers out. We need to do the WHOIS lookups. And they said, oh, okay, we'll do that. And we say, hey, but we whitelisted it in radar, and everyone says, oh, we never checked that. We don't update that. People don't do that. It's another thing. These systems are only as good as the input you put into them, and a lot of the people, most people are, I won't say inherently lazy, but they don't look at that, and they don't do it, and adding another system on top of this, like EROS, really concerns me because it could be something that only some people are using, some are not, and if you don't have 100% commitment, it just won't work.
Robbie here from OneAPI. I did come in a little bit late, so I might be repeating what has already been said. For the registrar, I would, there's a standard for registrations, renewals, transfers, EPP. I would love to see a standard for the handling of premium domains. It's, we've dealt, there are new business models, fantastic, new handling of premium domains, variable pricing, fantastic. But what we're also seeing is a different methodology of handling of the premium domains, right? Some registries give you lists with pricing that you implement in your backend. Other registries have gone down the path of automating it, where we actually have to do a price check, get the price back, and confirm, hey, we have seen that this is a premium domain, and we confirm that we want to pay this premium price, right? And as a registrar, we would love to see a standard in that regard across all premium domains without an exception.
So could I give a, I'll give a, this is Jeff Newman, I'll give a plug for the DNA now.
Wow, wait.
There is a registry, registrar operations group that's sponsored by the DNA, and that issue is actually one that's discussed by the operations committee. Without getting into anyone's business models, how can we create standardized practices for registries and registrars to interact when they deal with premium names and different types of billing systems? We never talk price, but we only talk about if you have a tiered billing system, let's say, this is a good way of between a registry and a registrar how to interact and share whatever pricing is. So that's so something that we're working on there.
There is a fear. I guess premium domains is a little different because they're always going to be around, right? You know, that we are, a lot of the problems we've had, and I think Richard Tindall said it earlier, are teething problems of launching TLDs. It's once we move into BAU mode, business as usual mode, but I was just thinking it through as I was talking.
That's
I think
premium
is going to be an ongoing issue. I was thinking more around how to do Landrush and Sunrise and blah, blah, blah.
And I think one point to that is, I'll give sort of registry hat on now, that in the beginning on our premium names, we did not include the price check. We didn't include the price when you did an EPP check, but now we've made that change, and now when you do an EPP check command, it returns the price on a premium name. And it's just, it's the evolution of it. Like, we're learning, trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
Right, and these are, right, and this is, we
the exact feedback you need.
Yeah, this is the feedback we need. Like, we made that change based upon feedback. Robbie's great about giving us feedback, others, in a nice way. I'm not saying, like, yeah. And most of the registrars are, and it's great to do this. And I think what we'd like to do is, you know, it's hard to get a uniform piece, but I think to establish best practices and to say, this is what's great, this is what registrars do. I mean, we should be a dynamic industry where we're making these changes as the business moves along.
Yeah, it was, and Rich doesn't seem to be here anymore, but GoDaddy did something similar, right? If you think about, oh, he's here, behind the curtain, mate. you know, before the launch of new GTLDs, GoDaddy, clearly being one of the bigger players in the market, said, hey, guys, if you want to play well with us and play easily with us and want us to, you know, onboard your TLD in an efficient fashion, these are the rules that make it easy for that to happen. You didn't force them upon anybody, right? Because you can't. You're just a registrar. But I thought that was really interesting, and I think what if it had happened as a group of registrars that did that and said, hey, we all want it to be like this, you probably would have had the registries go, oh, you know, and react. So maybe that's something that should, because it can come from registries, but I think it actually needs to come from registrars because you guys know what works and what doesn't, what's good for you and bad for you. But the other problem you've got, Robbie, is now the registry, you've got, and this is from my own experience now, you've got registrars with legacy systems that we want it this way because it suits my registry for what it is right now. Then you've got others that are prepared, like you, to make changes and adjust and do what is best. And the problem is that there's no one answer here. That's close to a screw you, Adrian. That's what that is. I can see that. I know that my wife has a very similar face to that. That came out wrong. Thanks for listening, the three of you. Okay, so you know, what's the outcome of that one there, guys? It's just a pain point, but how do we address it? The registry ops group is probably a first port of call here, Jeff, right? Yes, Adrian.
One good thing about the registry ops part of the DNA is you do not have to be a DNA member in order to participate. So,
yep.
Even though the DNA is great and you should join, you don't have to do it in order to
be a part of this stuff. Yep. So we would love to hear some more voices around that particular part of the conversation. Tom, are you still with us? Tom's still here. We're now going to ask, who wants to talk about how registries are circumventing their RA obligations? Hands up. There's one. Good. That's more than what we've had. Yeah. So Tom, get up to the microphone here because we had two votes, which is one vote more than what we've had on any other topic.
to hear, and maybe you should say what you think, define what circumventing RA obligations is.
And
your
first of all, I don't use the word circumvent to imply that in a negative sense, so I don't want you to take I thought it would be a good neutral word. So you know, certainly there are, I think, some valid business models where a registry should not have to accept all registrars. Right? I can certainly recognize that need and certainly support it in many cases. So, but I also think that you know, the code of conduct is there for a reason, and so we should discuss whether or not, you know, under what scenarios that should be enforced and under what scenarios it should not be. And so I think this is where a lot of the friction happens between registries and registrars, right? And so the question is, how should we address that friction? Because as someone pointed out earlier, you try something creative and you get reported to compliance. So, you know, one person's trash, another person's treasure. Your creativity is breached. So why don't we figure out a more constructive way to identify how registries can choose their channels?
Let me poke the beast here a little bit, right? So, are you, as a registry, do I have to offer you the same marketing program as everybody else, every other registrar, if I'm doing a marketing program?
So, you know, even before, back in 2001 or 2002, this was a rule, and registries were able to find ways around it, right? So, you know, to say, oh, we're offering everyone the same deal. The deal is, if you sell a million names in 1 week, you get this price point. Everyone gets the same deal, right? Obviously, there's only two or three registrars that can take them up on the offer. So, you know, this kind of rules has been circumvented for a decade, right? And so I think the registries with more integrity would not come out with a deal like that and pretend to be sincere about, hey, we're giving everyone the equal chance. Clearly it's not the same, right? So some registries have avoided those types of deals and said, you know, we're running a promo. It's available to any registrar regardless of the volume you might happen to do, right? So that's a more equal level playing field for registrars to play.
And why do I have to point to me where it says I have to treat you equally with respect to marketing programs?
So the question is a matter of interpretation.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that's
good.
Why I brought this topic up. So
good.
What
I'm trying to do it too, mate.
Sorry?
I'm trying to help move it along, so yeah, keep going.
So let's put it out there for the registries, all right? What does the code of conduct mean when it says you must treat all registrars equally? Is it you need to make sure they have, well, this on a technical level, you have EPP connections to the registry. Must they all have the same level of connections to the registry? Or does one registrar get more connections than the other? Is that fair or equal? I'll throw it out.
Right, so maybe let's helicopter up just a little bit higher here and say, so I think it'd be great if someone that knows these things better than me, because I'm certainly not a policy person, but someone that knows that wording, because it's really around that wording that's the interpretation. It's about registry services, operations and registry services, right? You got it?
Yeah, so there's really two provisions in the registry agreement that we're talking about. One is equivalent access, and that's in the body of the RA itself, right? And that's equivalent access to the registry back-end system, so the technical functions of the registry. And now we have the code of conduct, which is Spec 9, applies even to legacy TLDs, and that's where it gets a little bit squishier, and it doesn't talk about equal, and again, neither does the registry agreement. It talks about equivalent, but it says, you know, registries must treat all of their registrars in a non-discriminatory manner, and it is. It's open to interpretation. So that's the two sets of language that we're dealing with. And from my view, because one is in the body of the agreement and the other is in the separate thing, the code of conduct, you got to believe that they're different. And my interpretation is that the code of conduct is broader, but nobody really knows what it means.
Do you guys want to keep going down the track I'm on, or are we going to change gear?
Yes, just from a registrar perspective, I would certainly feel discriminated against if I were treated substantially different than my competitor for no objective reason. If there were an objective reason for different treatment, then I could accept that.
So give me an objective reason. Give me it for instance.
For example, while a registry is not able to directly choose registrar, pick and choose the registrars that they would like, they were able to set up criteria that a registrar must fulfill in order to be eligible to get accredited. While these criteria are very open for some TLDs, they're very strict for others. And in some TLDs, the criteria were so strict that almost no registrar would be willing to accept them or able to accept them unless they fulfill this very narrow criteria. And as long as criteria are not arbitrarily picked, but there's a certain logic to it, then I would, could as a registrar accept that these were not arbitrary and I would not be feeling too much discriminated. With the pricing question is, it's very, the pricing at this, at this point it's very, very unclear what pricings are out there. And there's a lot of feeling amongst the registrar that there's very arbitrary pricing for registrars with no criteria out there.
Are you saying between registrars? So is it arbitrary pricing between registrars or across the namespace?
Across the namespace.
Okay.
So one registrar might get one pricing while the other get another with no criteria that determine why this differential pricing is there. On the, unless they ask for it, is a valid criteria. I would say that a registry may differentiate in pricing, but they must publish the criteria by which they do so. That would be a minimum requirement in my book.
Okay, helpful. Jordan?
So I'm going to poke the bear a little more here, but I'm going to caveat this by saying we take the code of conduct very seriously and very literal.
We being
how,
Google?
How we interpret it. Yeah, Google registrars. But I guess I'm curious, why do registrars care about this? Like, we just talked about how if a registry, like, creates a bunch of rules that a registrar doesn't like, then the registrar just says, oh, I'm not going to carry that registry. Why do registrars think that it's important that registries can't do the same thing? Can't say, like, oh, that registrar is annoying to deal with. I'm sick of talking to them. I'm just not going to do business with them. Why do registrars feel like it's important that – I can understand for .com or for some of the legacy TLDs.
Yeah, absent of market power.
Where there's some market power, but for these new TLDs, you guys aren't even sure if you really want to sell them or not. Like, why do you care that they're forced to do business with you under equal terms as your competition? If you don't like how they're treating you, you just should say, well, you guys are jerks. I'm not going to sell your TLD, your TLD. And it's unclear to me why this is an important rule.
Yeah, and so to jump on that while Volker's walking to, that's hard to say, Volker's walking to the microphone. He's now there and I've wasted it. I think about this and you think about market economics, right? And I've had a chat with a few of these people and Rob Hall hates it when I talk about this, but yeah, the market will do what the market wants. And if I had a plumbing supplies wholesaler and I decided one day that I was going to offer one of my distributors a discount, and then one of the other distributors found out, and I said, well, if you don't like it, I'm only hurting myself because you're not going to sell my product anymore. That's just the natural law of things. And if I decide to get into the market myself and start offering those products directly to market and my distributors don't like it, they leave. So, you know, I'm wondering why the domain name industry is different. And I'm not, you know, this is just the way my brain works. I'm not decided one way or the other. But I'm just trying to work out why we're different here and why we think we should be playing by what seems to be, and please correct me if I'm off base here, seems to be a different set of rules.
I think the rules are not separate. I think we are talking about non-discrimination on
unknown factors. If they're known factors of the known categories, then that's something different if these can be followed. I think if some registry were selling .bigot and didn't want to say to sell to a registrar that also sells .gay, then the question would not be asked. It would be very, very clear that this would be religious discrimination. This shouldn't be allowable. Why should it be different for other categories? Why should a registry purposely exclude a registrar that has done nothing wrong, that might need the TLD to fill its reseller channel because it has resellers that need it, that might go to another registrar, which might be affiliated with the registry, because he has that TLD and take their entire portfolio with him. It's for many registrars, it's an economic disadvantage not to be able to carry a TLD in their portfolio if they want to. If they are, for example, set up in a way that they want to offer as broad a portfolio as they can for their resellers and their customers.
That implies to me that you think that the registries have some power over registrars, in which the registrars have to carry, you know, registrars feel like they have to carry TLDs. And in reality, as a registry, I feel like the opposite of that is true. I need you guys to sell my stuff, otherwise no one's going to buy it, right? Like, so in my opinion, it feels like in the current market, registrars have more leverage in the relationship. And so I'm curious why you think that the Rich... Those guys don't sell our TLDs. We have some rules. They don't like them. They don't sell any of our TLDs, right? And there's nothing I can do to force Rich to sell my TLDs. I can change my rules. But, but go down there. They obviously don't feel like they're suffering at all.
Jordan, if you cast your mind back to when .co went live, they're a CCTLD. They're out in the freaking Wild West and able to do anything they want. And they... They only launched, remember they had a limited number of registrars they were going to launch with? We're only going to do it with 3 or something like that? And everybody, 10. Okay, thank you. But still not everybody. And they cut people off. And registrars wanted to sell and they said, no, this is how we're going to do it. The world didn't imply. But we rolled on as a market. So there's got to be something said for that.
So I guess my question to Volker is, why do you feel like registries have more leverage in the relationship than the registrars do?
I don't think they have more leverage, but as a market power, they need us as a registrar to sell their product. Yes, that's true. But there is a movement amongst registries to pick and choose which registrars they want to serve, and that is a very dangerous path to go down.
But the reverse is true, right? Like, Rich doesn't like my rules, so he doesn't have to sell my TLDs. But if I don't like, I don't know, I don't like your website, I can't say, like, I don't want you to sell my TLD. Why is it that I have to, any registrar, I have to allow them to sell my TLD, but registrars can choose whichever TLDs they want to sell?
Because that's in the RA.
There's a couple of points. First of all, most of your rules are just fine, Jordan. From my personal standpoint, as someone in this industry, and I don't want our legal to yell at me here or anything like that. But I mean, there's only one place that I can go to provide a specific TLD to our customers, and if that sole source decides that they don't want to allow it through me, yet they've been given the right. They are the only ones that are allowed to allocate that one out. I can't go anywhere else to get it. And they've been given that right through an application process through ICANN. It's not the same thing as a plumbing joint that I could get one made differently from someone else and serve a purpose that's similar. There's only one on the planet. And I think that that's a...
How is it different to an iPhone? So to Apple iPhone. Apple decides who gets to sell them. Apple's only got one iPhone. There's only one
Apple
iPhone.
Mixing metaphors when you refer to a company like Apple with an organization such as ICANN that is giving a de facto monopoly to a product to someone and licensing
them
to sell it. And that's the difference.
I hate it when you're right, Rich.
I do not want to get into a legal discussion that I will lose when it comes to talking about monopolies and things like that. I'm just talking about my perspective there. And as far as fair treatment, I'm going to use an analog here. And let's say that there's a government agency relative to giving food to families required to treat every family the same. So they give every family one loaf of bread. A family of 2 is going to be well fed. A family of 15 is going to go hungry. is the equivalency to be intended on the allocation of the item, or is it on the mitigation of hunger? So it really is something to determine. Are we trying to make sure that all registrars are able to adequately treat each registrant equally, or are we trying to make sure that every registrar has every access, equal access? Because a registrar with 100 registrants getting the same number of connection with, let's say, Enum, for example, is not, the Enum's not going to be able to provide the same level of support and care to those individual registrants. So it's a more complex question than just marketing funds or how many connections to the registry. It's what's the quality of care that we're giving to the people that we all rely on, which is the registrar.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. Either one?
It's Jim Tran with Dominion. I don't think I quite understand Volker's concern that allowing a registry to choose its partners is a slippery slope or dangerous road. I understand Rich's point to some extent about monopoly. I don't think I agree all the way, but I kind of get the point of it. But, you know, going back to what, you know, the point about, you know, plumbing supply or Apple or anything else, if you're concerned as a registrar that you don't have access to a particular TLD, then go talk to the registry and get yourself an agreement, right? So that would be my point. And I know there are issues that you can't get your own RRA because we have to have a standard RRA. So maybe that's an issue that needs to be addressed as well.
Rubens.
Just to introduce one other vantage point here, that it's very nice in a market where you have many registries and registrars, but there are markets with 200 million possible customers that have 0 2013 accredited registers. So for registries operating on those markets, these rules is simply a death sentence to new DTLDs. So you're probably looking at your own home turf in the U.S. or Europe, but it's not the same everywhere in the world, but these rules apply equally globally.
Thanks, Ruben. A good geographic Volker, real quick, because we've got people bleeding out of this room, which I want to try to put a stop to, because we're going to wind up in 2 seconds. But so keep going, mate.
Yes, in response to Ruben's, while there might not be registrars, we have resellers there, so no worries. And with regards to the previous statement, yes, the problem is that, especially in the world with vertical integration, that a registry may decide that they only want to sell through their own registrar and promote that registrar, bring that registrar in a position to compete also for other TLDs with the registrar. So for a registrar like ours, with a large reseller portfolio, having a complete portfolio is very important. Having an incomplete portfolio may cause a customer to shift from one reseller registrar to another. Now, if you have a registry that discriminates on terms that are not equal or based on factual categories that can be understood or it's just arbitrary, then you have a problem for that registrar because it cannot compete in the marketplace for all TLDs.
What happens if that rule was a rule that you didn't like across, within the RRA? So there's a particular Dot Bananas has a particular clause in their RRA that says you've got to do something that you cannot possibly sign. You hate it, your organization, but you still want to offer all the portfolio, but you say no. And the next registrar next to you says, well, we'll sign that. We're happy with that.
Then that's our choice. Then that's our choice. And we have signed a couple. We have a few TLDs that are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs that we did not sign because they are in the more nutty flavor.
Got it. That's a fair response. Thanks, mate. Steve and then Rob, and then we're going to close this out. Okay?
Do I come as a new speaker?
You're a new speaker, okay. Steve.
Okay. Woo! I want to respond to Jordan's issue, and I completely support Volker on this. I think the biggest issue for us is corporate registrars. I'm surprised no other corporate registrars spoke up, but you know, we certainly don't want to introduce our clients to other registrars, not that we're afraid of competition. It just add complexity. Our corporate clients use us because they want a single source to go for everything. And I know for a fact that there were a number of GeoTLDs that made it very difficult for companies that were not in-country to become accredited registrars. And then once it got into GA, everybody started scrambling, and we lost domain names to cyber squatters who, because we couldn't actually get accredited. There were cases where we actually had to register domain names at other registrars just to get them locked down. It adds extreme complexity to corporate registrars like us. So, you know, I just think that there needs to be this whole industry is, in theory, built on standards. And when certain registrars push the limit and don't act fairly across all registrars, it's just not good for the industry. And it actually, our customers who don't fully understand the domain industry, it just makes the domain industry look very, very poor.
Good. Thanks, mate. Good point. Rob, Volker wants to do one more close. I'm going to stop anybody from leaving in the meantime, so make it quick.
They won't leave. That's a perfect segue. I want to look at the other side of it. We run a registry, .sox, very contentious for some people. We've had to sign contracts with registrars that immediately start trying to take our business apart, not sell our product. And I'm forced by ICANN to deal with them. So they stand up and they call us criminals and they write letters about our criminal activity and none of it's been proven and they make these false allegations. And yet I still have to sell to them, even though what I really want to do is cut them off, never deal with them, and say you're not ever selling my product again. So, Steve, to your point, there's two sides to this. Right? I'm forced as a registry to deal with a partner, and I use that term loosely, that I want nothing to do with. And so one of the reasons I asked the question of ICANN earlier today was to get some clarity on exactly that. What does this equal access mean? If I've got someone working against my business goals, am I allowed to say, I'm not selling to you? I'll sell to people that want to sell my product. So it's not as simple as, you know, all registrars need to be treated equally and all registries need to be treated equally. There are some of us that see the registrar channel working very well for us and parts of it working very well against us. And as long as that dichotomy exists for us, we're going to start taking action against some of them. Okay?
Volker, real quick, mate, you promised me quick.
Topic of engagement within ICANN. How many of you are registrars? Please, arms up. How many of you registrars that are now that are here are not members within the registrar stakeholder group? Arms up. Why not? You can still be a member. You don't have voting rights. You will be represented in some form. It will be helpful.
Okay. Great. Little plug there. $500 from the BIM for the no. So speaking of which, so the drinks, I've got to do a couple of announcements. So please don't pack up. Just stay with me for a second. And we'll close out on this what we just discussed. Drinks tonight are at 5:30 at the bar, out by the pool. We've got $2,000 on the bar now. All right? So we got ICANN coming in for a measly 500, the bastard. So they got 500. We got the Domain Name Association have put 500 in. Newstar, my new boss, has put 500 bucks in. And Rebel.com have put 500 bucks in. So round of applause for those guys doing that. Thanks, Rob. So that's at 5:30. Please come down, and you know, otherwise there's going to be a lot of us getting very drunk if we don't get it. You know, more. It's about the loaves of bread, right? If we get more people, there's less alcohol to go to me, which nobody needs. Okay, so that's that. So there was another announcement. Oh, tomorrow. So lunch is not provided by ICANN tomorrow, apparently. However, out by the pool, if you want to pay for it, it's $18. You can do a room charge, credit card, diners, blah blah blah. But they told me to say that. So just be prepared for the fact that you will have to either pay for your lunch or go elsewhere tomorrow. And I think the session, Paul, closes at 11:30 tomorrow. Okay, and then there's an ICANN tour. Is that really still going ahead? Is that real? I thought that was a joke. The ICANN tour. Fantastic. Come on, everybody, get happy. It's voluntary. Right. Yep. Yeah. No cameras, please. Alright, so that'll be in the afternoon. Outside of that, guys, I felt like we were getting some good traction there. We covered a couple of good topics. I won't do the objective review again. We'll save that for tomorrow, for the close. But I think from the sessions we had today, clearly we picked up on each of the objectives that we went around. So I think we can fairly say we're going to tick some off. I will do a review with some of the other, with Jennifer and with Paul as to the other objectives, make sure that we line them up front and centre for tomorrow to cover off. It sounded like we still had some more to go on that conversation. So maybe tomorrow, if things start to slow down, we might want to get going there again. Bring out that elephant and put it fair square about here. It's the size of my ego, Jeff. So we'll do that, which I think we were just getting to. Paul, one last comment. That's it for me. Thanks, guys. So.
Thanks, Adrian. For tomorrow, guys, we're supposed to start the day registries meeting with staff, registrars meeting with staff. So question for the group, do we want to do the accounting? We can 15 minutes, half hour even, take it out of that, all meet here. Since there are more registry reps, we're going to meet in this room. Registrar reps are going to meet in Espada, which is a big room down on the third floor. But mezzanine, pardon, mezzanine. But would you want to start the day, as Adrian suggested, doing our accounting, or just go right to our thing and then we'll pick it up first thing when we gather late in the morning? What's the preference? Just need to know so they can set up.
If I may, maybe we, if we don't start, we probably won't do it. So let's make sure, oh, shoot, we've got the, what time are we? 9:30, yeah, that's right. So not 9:30? So you better do it after, because we've got a thing from 8 till 9:30. So, yeah. Yes, I won't be able to be here to do it. So, yeah. So.
All right. So some are in another meeting. So, okay, that's the way it works. Registries come here. Registrars go to Espada. And then we'll all regroup a little later in the morning. I forget. I think it's like 11 o'clock. 9. Start tomorrow at 9.
One last thing as well, guys. You might have heard, I meant to say this, and I just got kicked for not saying it. And it sounds like we're flogging a dead horse here, but if one of the themes of today, I felt, was that if things are going to happen, we have to do it, right? The registries and the registrars need to mobilise and get it done. We can point to ICANN all we want, but, you know, it's like watching a glacier over there, okay? So we need to get moving. And as I say, I know we've flogged a dead horse on this, but this is why we stood up the Domain Name Association. Is so that we could bring everybody and get these conversations up. A lot of the things you were talking about today are going. They could go bigger, faster, stronger if we had more of you. Okay? Who here is a member of the Domain Name Association? That's great. I want to see some more. Okay? Have a think about it. All the board members will be downstairs. Who's on the board? Put your hands up here, please. Rich, Jordan, Jeff. Few more of us that John Nevitt, who's ducked out, and myself. When you're having a drink downstairs, please come and talk to us about it, or we're going to come and find you. Alrighty, so we'd love to get some more involvement from the smaller guys. This is where you can have a voice. Alrighty, so please have a good. Go to the website theDNA or Sedna. .org. Sedna.org. Cardiff, believe. Go there and you'll get more information. There's a beautiful photo of me on there as well. Great headshot. May turn you off. Actually, I think the new website, they took them down, didn't they? Anyway, there it is. All right, it's still there? All right, good work. Okay, good work. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you downstairs at 5:30 for drinks by the pool. Good work.